Across the river, the lion fed at intervals and then rested. A little after midnight, he began to roar, crashing bursts of sound that brought Claudia out of an uncomfortable doze and made her heart jump against her ribs. The terrible sound ended in a diminishing series of throaty grunts.
Why does he do that?
Claudia asked breathlessly. To let the world know who's boss around here. Then the hyena came, shrieking and hooting like a pack of ghouls, gibbering with excitement at the smell of the kill. And the lion drove them off, rushing heavily in the grass, snarling and roaring. But they came edging back as soon as he returned to feed, and they tittered and whooped at him, forming a restless circle around the bait tree. An hour before dawn, Claudia at last fell into a fitful sleep, hunched down in the chair, with her neck twisted at an awkward angle. And she awoke with a start to find it was light enough to make out the links of the chain that held the buffalo carcass. In the forest close by, a pair of ground hornbills, grotesque black birds as big as a wild turkey with the same bald red heads, were booming their dawn chorus in a ritual duet. Beside her, Ricardo was stretched out and yawning, and Sean stood up, rocking the McCann.
"What's happened?" Claudia mumbled. "Where's the lion?"
"He took off an hour ago," her father told her, "long before shooting light. Only one way you're going to get this cat, Capo, and that's with a jacklight or with a hell of a lot of luck."
"I'm a lucky guy," Ricardo grinned.
And they heard the distant beat of the Toyota's engine growing louder as Job came in to pick them up. They stayed in camp all that day, catching up on sleep lost the previous night. But when they went into the hide again that evening to wait for the lion, he had disappeared. He didn't come to the bait the following night either, and the safari came upon a period of hiatus. Sean and his team worked diligently but fruitlessly to find the lion. There was no report from the scouts whom Sean had placed to watch the elephant crossings on the Chihuahua River, which was the northern boundary of Sean's concession. Ricardo Montero was not interested in hunting lesser plains game, such as the sable antelope or kudu or eland. These activities would have filled the days of another safari. Only the two lionesses and their cubs stayed on the banks of the riverbed, taking up permanent domicile.
"Courtney's five-star hotel," Sean complained. "Gourmet meals delivered daily."
The pride became so accustomed to their visits that the lionesses retreated only 100 yards or so into the forest with a few perfunctory low-key growls and watched with interest as a fresh carcass was hauled into the tree. They barely contained their impatience until the Toyota pulled away, and it was still in full view when they came loping back to inspect the latest offering. However, Frederick the Great did not return. They saw no sign of his huge, distinctive pug marks around the baits or upon the dirt tracks that Sean patrolled each day, searching the area for 40 miles around the camp.
"But why would he just vanish like that?" Ricardo protested.
"Because he is a cat. And who knows how a cat thinks?"
Since that brief but torrid episode in the lion hide, the relationship between Sean and Claudia had altered subtly. Their bickering had become more vindictive and bitter, their overt resentment more intense, and their efforts to discomfort each other more spirited. When she called him a racist, he smiled at her.
"In America, that word is dreaded as the ultimate insult that can end a man's political career, ruin his business, or ostracize him from society. You're also terrified of it, and the blacks know it, and exploit it to the full. Even the toughest hard-headed businessman or politician rolls over like a puppy dog and whines if you call him that," Sean told her gleefully. "But this isn't America, ducky, and here we aren't terrified of that word. Here, racism is the same as tribalism. And we're all blatant tribalists, especially the blacks. If you want to experience true dedicated tribalism and racism, then come and live in one of the newly independent African states. If you call your average black politician a racist, he would take it as a compliment. It would be the same as calling him a patriot."
Her wounded protestations were ample reward. for his efforts as he looked for new ways to provoke her.
"Did you know I'm a South African?" he asked,
and she looked appalled.
"I thought you were a Brit."
He shook his head and smiled in that infuriating way of his.
"I imagine you support your government sanctions against my country."
"Of course, every decent person does."
"Even if it means that a million blacks starve as a direct consequence?"
He didn't wait for her reply.
"What about disinvestment of American business from my country? You're all for that too."
"I campaigned for it on campus," she told him proudly. "I never missed a rally or a march."
"So your plan is to convert a country by withdrawing all your missionaries and burning down the cathedral. That's brilliant."
"You're twisting it."
"We should be grateful to you for the success of your efforts. You forced your own citizens to sell our assets back to us at 5 cents in the dollar. Overnight, you created 200 multimillionaires in South Africa, and every one of them had a white face.
Congratulations, and our sincere thanks, Stucky."
But while they argued, they were avidly aware of each other, and that physical contact they had shared lay between them like a poisonous serpent, dangerous but intriguing. Claudia had been celibate for almost 2 years now, ever since she had split from the physician whom she lived with for a short while, until his demands for marriage became intolerable. Celibacy did not suit her affectionate Latin nature, but she was fastidious. She found herself lying awake in her tent at night, listening to Sean's voice from the campfire as he talked to her father, the soft, masculine rumble, just low enough for her to be unable to catch the words. Once she thought she heard her name, and she sat up and strained her hearing, disappointed that she couldn't hear what he said about her. Then, when at last he called good night to Ricardo and went to his own tent, he had to pass close to hers. She lay rigid in bed, listening to his footsteps, and watching the beam of his flashlight through the canvas, preparing an icy dismissal in the most insulting terms, and then experiencing the tiniest prick of disappointment as his footsteps passed on without a check. On the ninth morning of the safari, when they drove out to check the bait on the river bank, the younger lioness, her eyes now completely healed, was once again violently aggressive, snarling at Sean and mock-charging him from 100 yards with her tail, lashing as soon as he dismounted from the Toyota to inspect the bait. When she backed off and turned to retreat, they saw the pink stain of blood on the soft, pale beige fur beneath her tail. "Growly Gertie has come into season," Sean exulted. "Now we have the one bait that Frederick the Great won't be able to resist. You said you were a lucky guy, Capo. Now let's find out just how lucky." Sean wanted to get this lion before this extraordinary opportunity passed. There was no time to track down one of the huge buffalo herds along the Chihuahua River for a fresh bait, so Ricardo shot a young kudu bull from a herd of bachelors near the camp. They hung the carcass on the bait tree in the glade where they had last seen the big male lion, this time low enough for the lionesses to reach it easily. And they climbed into the McCann in the early afternoon. Within an hour, the lionesses had picked up the scent of fresh blood and came trotting down the dry river bed, followed by the straggling, squabbling bunch of cubs. While the older lioness fed heartily from the fresh kudu carcass, the younger female ate only lightly and sporadically. In between, she prowled restlessly around the area of the trampled grass beneath the tree, snarling at her cubs, or rolling on her back, or sitting up to lick at the blood smear beneath her own tail. At intervals, she stood staring into the forest, and then held her head low to the ground and let out a long, melancholy moan. It was a sound so full of agonized longing that Claudia felt herself empathizing with a sleek and beautiful creature. "That's right, Gertie," Sean whispered behind Claudia's shoulder. "Call to Big Daddy. Tell him what sweets you've got for him here."
"It's not fair," Claudia thought fiercely. "It's not fair to use her like this."
Suddenly both lionesses leapt up to face into the forest, and the older female snarled softly. Alarmed, the cubs ceased their endless play and huddled behind their dams. Then the young lioness went forward through the grass, slinking and undulating her whole body in a blatant sexual display, and she emitted a series of low, welcoming moans. "Steady, Capo." Sean's hand was on Ricardo's arm, preventing him from raising the rifle. "Take your time." Then, out of the forest, came the lion. At first they saw only the tip of his mane above the grass as he came forward at an eager trot to meet the lioness. She rushed forward shamelessly, and in a trampled clearing they came together. "Wait, Capo," Sean whispered. He wanted the girl to watch it. The lioness brushed her body against the male, back and forth. She stroked him with the full length of her silken flanks, and the lion fluffed out his mane so that he seemed to double in size, responding to her advances, licking her face as she cuddled into the dense dark bush of his mane. Then, deliberately, she turned and presented him with her hindquarters, cocking her tail high, sending a spurt of pink-stained urine out under his nose. The lion groaned and curled his upper lip, exposing his great yellow fangs in a rictus of passion. His back arched reflexively, and Claudia wriggled in her seat as the lion stretched out his neck and licked the female under the tail with a long, curling pink tongue. The lioness submitted to his caress for a minute, then whirled flirtatiously, and from across the river they heard her low purrs of invitation. Sean placed his hand lightly on Claudia's thigh. The gesture was concealed from her father by the side of the chair. She made no attempt to pull away. The lioness turned from the male, ran a few light mincing paces, and then flattened her body against the earth, looking back over her shoulder. The lion came to where she lay, moving with a stiff-legged gait, and he covered her body with his own, standing astride her. And as he lowered his haunches over hers, his penis unsheathed from its pouch, glistening pinkly, and the lioness laid her tail forward along her back. Sean ran the tips of his fingers up to the juncture of Claudia's thighs, and he could feel the springing mattress of her pubic hair through the cloth of her breeches. Her thighs opened slightly under his hand. The lion humped his back over the female in a series of convulsive, regular spasms, and then he threw back his huge, maned head and roared, and the lioness roared with him, and he reached down and bit her lightly in the back of her neck, a fond, possessive gesture. For long moments, they were frozen together like that, and then the lion leapt off her, and at the same moment Claudia reached down and placed her hand over Sean's. She took his little finger and twisted it against the joint so viciously that she almost dislocated it, and agony shot up his arm to the shoulder. He almost cried out in protest, but Ricardo was sitting close, and though his view of his daughter's lower body was obscured by the canvas side of the chair, he would certainly guess at Sean's advances. With an effort, Sean kept silent and drew his hand back, surreptitiously massaging the damaged finger. And he could see the corner of Claudia's mouth was curled in a vindictive little smile. Across the river, the lioness stood up and shook herself. Then she walked out with a slow, satisfied air onto the open river bank. There she paused and looked back at the lion where he was sitting on his haunches, still half hidden in the long grass. "Get ready, Capo." Sean was still massaging his finger.